humans, all the longevity of butterflies. He smiled. The smile showed teeth. His skin had the bluish paleness of hardened ice. His hair was nearly white and hung arrow straight to his shoulders, just brushing the collar of his elegant dark coat. His waistcoat was gray silk, figured with a pattern of twisting silver symbols. He looked like a Russian prince out of a book. "It's good to see you, Lady Belcourt," he said, and there was an accent to his voice, too, not French, more Slavic. "Did I catch a glimpse of a new carriage through the window?" "This is De Quincey," Camille's voice breathed in Tessa's mind. Images rose up suddenly in her brain, like a fountain turned on, pouring forth visions instead of water. She saw herself dancing with De Quincey, her hands on his shoulders. She stood by a black stream under the white sky of a northern night, watching as he fed on something pale and sprawled in the grass. She sat, motionless, at a long table of other vampires, De Quincey at the head of it, as he shouted and screamed at her, and brought his fist down so hard that the marble top of the table shivered into cracks. He was shouting at her, something about a werewolf and a relationship she would live to regret. Then she was sitting alone in a room, in the dark, and weeping, and De Quincey came in and knelt by her chair and took her hand, wanting to comfort her, though he had been the one to cause her pain. "Vampires can weep?" Tessa thought first. And then they have known each other a long time, Alexis De Quincey and Camille Belcourt. They were friends once, and he thinks they are friends still.
"Indeed, Alexis," she said,
and as she said it, she knew that this was the name she had been trying to recall at the dinner table the other night, the foreign name the Dark Sisters had spoken. "Alexis."
"I wanted something a bit, roomier."
She held her hand out and stood still while he kissed it, his lips cold on her skin. De Quincey's eyes slid past Tessa to Will, and he licked his lips.
"And a new subjugate as well, I see. This one is quite fetching."
He reached out a thin, pale hand and drew his forefinger down the side of Will's cheek to his jaw.
"Such unusual coloring," he mused. "And these eyes."
"Thank you," said Tessa, in the manner of one being complimented on an especially tasteful choice of wallpaper. She watched nervously as De Quincey moved even closer to Will, who looked pale and strained. She wondered if he was having trouble holding himself back when surely every one of his nerves was screaming, "Enemy! Enemy!" De Quincey trailed his finger from Will's jaw to his throat, to the point at his collarbone where his pulse beat.
"There," he said,
and this time when he smiled his white fangs were visible. They were sharp and fine at the points, like needles. His eyelids drooped, languorous and heavy, and his voice when he spoke was thick.
"You wouldn't mind, Camille, would you, if I just had a little bite?"
Tessa's vision went white. She saw De Quincey again, the front of his white shirt scarlet with blood, and she saw a body hanging upside down from a tree at the dark stream's edge, pale fingers dangling in the black water. Her hand whipped out, faster than she'd ever imagined she could have moved, and caught De Quincey's wrist.
"My darling, no," she said,
a wheedling tone in her voice.
"I'd so like to keep him to myself for just a little while. You know how your appetite runs away with you sometimes."
She lowered her eyelids. De Quincey chuckled.
"For you, Camille, I will exercise my restraint."
He drew his wrist away, and for a moment, under the flirtatious poise, Tessa thought she saw a flash of anger in his eyes, quickly masked.
"In honor of our long acquaintance."
"Thank you, Alexis."
"Have you given any further thought, my dear," he said, "to my offer of a membership in the Pandemonium Club? I know the mundanes bore you, but they are a source of funds, nothing more. Those of us on the board are on the verge of some very exciting discoveries. Power beyond your wildest dreams, Camille."
Tessa waited, but Camille's inner voice was silent. Why? She fought down panic and managed to smile at De Quincey.
"My dreams," she said, and hoped he would think the hoarseness in her voice was from amusement and not fear, "may be more wild already than you imagine."
Beside her, she could tell that Will had shot her a surprised look. He quickly schooled his features to blandness, though, and glanced away. De Quincey, his eyes gleaming, only smiled.
"I ask only that you consider my offer, Camille. And now I must attend to my other guests. I trust I will see you at the ceremony."
Dazed, she simply nodded.
"Of course."
De Quincey bowed, turned, and vanished into the crowd. Tessa let her breath out. She hadn't realized she'd been holding it.
"Don't," said Will softly at her side. "Vampires don't need to breathe, remember?" "My God, Will," Tessa realized she was shaking. "He would have bitten you."
Will's eyes were dark with rage.
"I would have killed him first."
A voice spoke at Tessa's elbow. "And then you would both be dead." She whirled and saw that a tall man had appeared just behind her, as soundlessly as if he had drifted there like smoke. He wore an elaborate brocade jacket like something out of the previous century, with a riot of white lace at his collar and cuffs. Below the long jacket, Tessa glimpsed knee breeches and high-buckled shoes. His hair was like rough black silk, so dark it had a bluish sheen to it. His skin was brown, the cast of his features like gems. She wondered if perhaps, like Jem, he was of foreign extraction. In one ear he sported a silver loop from which dangled a diamond pendant the size of a finger, which sparkled brilliantly under the lights, and there were diamonds set into the head of his silver walking stick. He seemed to gleam all over like witchlight. Tessa stared. She had never seen anyone dressed in such a mad fashion.
"This is Magnus," said Will quietly, sounding relieved. "Magnus Bane."
"My darling Camille," Magnus said, bending to kiss her gloved hand. "We have been parted too long." The moment he touched her, Camille's memories came rushing up in a flood. Memories of Magnus holding her, kissing her, touching her in a distinctly intimate and personal manner. Tessa jerked her hand back with a squeak.
"And now you reappear," she thought resentfully in Camille's direction.
"I see," he murmured, straightening. His eyes, when he raised them to Tessa's, nearly made her lose her composure. They were gold-green with slit pupils, the eyes of a cat set in a distinctly human face. They were full of shimmering amusement. Unlike Will, whose eyes held a trace of sadness even when he was amused, Magnus's eyes were full of a surprising joy. They darted sideways, and he jerked his chin toward the far side of the room, indicating that Tessa should follow him.
"Come along, then. There is a private room where we can talk."
In a daze, Tessa followed him, Will at her side. Was she imagining it, or did the white faces of the vampires turn to follow her as she passed? A red-headed female vampire in an elaborate blue dress glared at her as she went. Camille's voice whispered that the woman was jealous of De Quincey's regard for her. Tessa was grateful when Magnus finally reached a door, so cleverly set into the paneled wall that she didn't realize it was a door until the warlock had produced a key. He slid the door open with a soft click. Will and Tessa followed him inside. The room was a library, obviously rarely used. Though volumes lined the walls, they were grimed with dust, as were the velvet curtains that hung across the windows. When the door shut behind them, the light in the room dimmed. Before Tessa could say anything, Magnus snapped his fingers and twin fires leapt up in the fireplaces on either side of the room. The flames of the fire were blue, and the fire itself had a strong scent, like burning joss sticks. "Oh!" Tessa could not stop a small exclamation of surprise from passing her lips. With a grin, Magnus flung himself onto the great marble-topped table in the center of the room and lay down on his side, his head propped up in his hand.
"Have you never seen a warlock do magic before?"
Will gave an exaggerated sigh. Please refrain from teasing her, Magnus. I expect Camille told you she knows very little of the shadow world.
Indeed, Magnus said unrepentantly. But it's hard to believe, considering what she can do.
His eyes were on Tessa. I saw your face when I kissed your hand. You knew who I was immediately, didn't you? You know what Camille knows. There are some warlocks and demons who can shift, take on any shape, but I have never heard of one who could do what you do.
It cannot be said for certain that I am a warlock, Tessa said. Charlotte says I'm not marked like a warlock would be marked.
Oh, you're a warlock, depend on it. Just because you don't have the bad ears. Magnus saw Tessa frown and raised his eyebrows.
Oh, you don't want to be a warlock, do you? You despise the idea.
I just never thought, Tessa said in a whisper, that I was anything other than human.
Magnus's tone was not unsympathetic.
Poor thing. Now that you know the truth, you can never go back.
Leave her alone, Magnus. Will's tone was sharp. I must search the room. If you won't help, at least try not to torment Tessa while I do it.
He moved toward the big oak desk in the corner of the room and began rummaging among the papers atop it.
Magnus glanced toward Tessa and winked. I think he's jealous, he said in a conspiratorial whisper. Tessa shook her head and moved toward the nearest bookshelf. There was a book propped open on the middle shelf as if to display it. The pages were covered with bright, intricate figures, some parts of the illustrations gleaming as if they had been painted onto the parchment with gold. Tessa exclaimed in surprise.
It's a Bible.
Does that astonish you? Magnus inquired.
I thought vampires couldn't touch holy things.
It depends on the vampire, how long they've been alive, what kind of faith they have. De Quincey actually collects old Bibles. He says there's hardly another book out there with so much blood on its pages. Tessa glanced toward the closed door. The faint swell of voices on the other side was audible.
Won't we excite some sort of comment hiding in here like this? The others, the vampires, I'm sure they were staring at us as we came in.
They were staring at Will. In some ways, Magnus's smile was as unnerving as a vampire's, even though he didn't have fangs. Will looks wrong. Tessa glanced over at Will, who was rummaging through the desk drawers with gloved hands. I find that hard to credit coming from someone dressed as you are, Will said. Magnus ignored this. Will doesn't behave like the other human subjugates. He doesn't stare at his mistress with blind adoration, for instance.
It's a monstrous hat of hers, said Will. Puts me off.
Human subjugates are never put off, said Magnus. They adore their vampire masters, whatever they wear. Of course, the guests were also staring because they know of my relationship with Camille and are wondering what we might be doing here in the library. Alone? He wiggled his eyebrows at Tessa. Tessa thought back to her visions.
De Quincey, he said something to Camille about regretting her relationship with a werewolf. He made it sound as if it were a crime she committed.
Magnus, who was now lying on his back and twirling his walking stick over his head, shrugged. To him it would be. Vampires and werewolves despise each other. They claim it has something to do with the fact that the two races of demons that spawned them were involved in a blood feud, but if you ask me, it's simply that they're both predators, and predators always resent incursions into their territory. Not that vampires are all that fond of the Fae, or my kind either, but De Quincey rather likes me. He thinks we're friends. In fact, I suspect he'd like to be more than friends. Magnus grinned to Tessa's confusion. But I despise him, though he doesn't know it.
Then why spend time with him at all?
Asked Will, who had moved to a tall secretary between two of the windows and was examining its contents.
Why come to his house?
Politics, said Magnus with another shrug. He is the head of the clan. For Camille not to come to his parties when invited would be construed as an insult. And for me to allow her to go alone would be careless. De Quincey is dangerous and no less to those of his own kind, especially those who have displeased him in the past.
Then you should,
Will began and broke off, his voice altering. I've found something.
He paused. Perhaps you should have a look at this, Magnus.
Will came over to the table and sat down on it what looked like a long sheet of rolled paper. He gestured for Tessa to join him and unrolled the paper across the table's surface.
There was little of interest in the desk, he said, but I did find this hidden in a false drawer in the cabinet. Magnus, what do you think?
Tessa, who had moved to stand beside Will at the table, gazed down at the paper. It was covered with a rough blueprint drawing of a human skeleton made up of pistons, cogs, and plates of hammered metal. The skull had a hinged jaw, open sockets for eyes, and a mouth that ended just behind the teeth. There was a panel in the chest, too, just like Miranda's. All along the left side of the page were scrawled what looked like notes in a language Tessa could not decipher. The letters were utterly unfamiliar.
Blueprint for an automaton, said Magnus, cocking his head to the side. An artificial human being.
Humans have always been fascinated by the creatures. I suppose because they are humanoid, but cannot die or be hurt. Have you ever read the Book of Knowledge of Ingenious Mechanical Devices?
I've never even heard of it, said Will.
Are there any bleak moors in it, shrouded in mysterious mists? Ghostly brides wandering the halls of ruined castles? A handsome fellow rushing to the rescue of a beauteous yet penniless maiden?
No, said Magnus. There's a rather racy bit about cogs halfway through, but really most of it is rather dry.
Then Tessa won't have read it either, said Will.
Tessa glared at him but said nothing.
She hadn't read it, and she wasn't in the mood to let Will get to her.
Well then, said Magnus. It was written by an Arab scholar 2 centuries before Leonardo da Vinci and described how machines could be built that would mimic the actions of human beings. Now, there's nothing alarming about that in and of itself, but it is this, Magnus's long finger brushed gently across the writing on the left side of the page, that concerns me.
Will leaned closer. His sleeve brushed Tessa's arm.
Yes, that was what I wanted to ask you about. Is it a spell?
Magnus nodded.
A binding spell, meant to infuse demonic energy into an inanimate object, thus giving that object a sort of life.
I've seen the spell used. Before the Accords, vampires liked to amuse themselves by creating little demonic mechanisms like music boxes that would play only at night, mechanical horses that could ride only after sundown, that sort of silliness. He tapped thoughtfully on the head of his walking stick. One of the great problems of creating convincing automatons, of course, has always been their appearance. No other material quite gives the semblance of human flesh.
But what if one were to use it?
Human flesh, I mean, Tessa asked. Magnus paused delicately.
The problem there for human designers is, obvious. Preserving the flesh destroys its appearance. One would have to use magic. And then magic again to bind the demon energy to the mechanical body.
And what would that achieve? Will asked, an edge to his voice.
Automatons have been built that can write poems, draw landscapes, but only those they are directed to create. They have no individual creativity or imagination. Animated by a demon energy, however, an automaton would have a measure of thought and will. But any bound spirit is enslaved. It would inevitably be entirely obedient to whoever had done the binding.
A clockwork army, Will said, and there was a sort of bitter humor in his voice. Born of neither heaven nor hell.
I wouldn't go that far, Magnus said. Demon energies are hardly an easy item to come by. One must summon demons up, then bind them, and you know what a difficult process that is. Obtaining enough demon energies to create an army would be well-nigh impossible and extraordinarily risky, even for an evil-minded bastard like De Quincey.
I see.
And with that, Will rolled up the paper and slipped it into his jacket.
Much obliged for your help, Magnus.
Magnus looked faintly puzzled, but his response was courteous.
Of course. I gather you wouldn't be sorry to see De Quincey gone and another vampire in his place, said Will.
Have you actually observed him breaking the law?
Once. I was invited here to witness one of his ceremonies. As it turned out, Magnus looked uncharacteristically grim. Well, let me show you. He turned and moved toward the bookshelf that Tessa had been examining earlier, gesturing for them to join him. Will followed, Tessa beside him. Magnus snapped his fingers again, and as blue sparks flew, the illustrated Bible slid to the side, revealing a small hole that had been cut into the wood at the back of the shelf. As Tessa leaned forward in surprise, she saw that it offered a view into an elegant music room. At least that was what she thought at first, seeing the chairs set up in rows facing the back of the room. It made a sort of theater. Rows of lit candelabras were set up for illumination. Red satin floor-length curtains blocked off the back walls, and the floor was slightly raised, creating a sort of makeshift stage. There was nothing on it but a single chair with a high wooden back. Steel manacles were attached to the arms of the chair, glittering like insect carapaces in the candlelight. The wood of the chair was blotched here and there with dark red stains. The legs of the chair, Tessa saw, were nailed to the floor. "This is where they have their little performances," said Magnus, an undertone of distaste in his voice. "They bring out the human and lock him or her to the chair. Then they take turns draining their victim slowly while the crowd watches and applauds."
"And they enjoy that," Will said.
The disgust in his voice was more than an undertone.
"The mundane's pain. Their fear."
"Not all the night children are like this," Magnus said quietly. "These are the worst of them."
"And the victims," said Will. "Where do they find them?"
"Criminals, mostly," said Magnus. "Drunkards, addicts, whores, the forgotten and lost. Those who will not be missed." He looked squarely at Will. "Would you like to elaborate on your plan?"
"We begin when we see the law being broken," said Will. "The moment a vampire moves to harm a human, I will signal the Enclave. They'll attack."
"Really?" Magnus said. "How will they get in?"
"Don't worry about that." Will was unfazed. "Your job is to take Tessa at that point and get her safely out of here. Thomas is waiting outside with the carriage. Bundle yourselves into it, and he'll take you back to the Institute."
"Seems a waste of my talents, assigning me to look after one moderately sized girl," Magnus observed.
"Surely you could use me."
"This is a shadow hunter affair," said Will. "We make the law, and we uphold the law. The assistance you've given us so far has been invaluable, but we require no more from you." Magnus met Tessa's eyes over Will's shoulder. His look was wry. "The proud isolation of the Nephilim. They have use for you when they have use for you, but they cannot bring themselves to share a victory with downworlders." Tessa turned to Will. "You're sending me away as well before the fighting starts?"
"I must," said Will. "It would be best for Camille not to be seen to be cooperating with shadow hunters."
"That's nonsense," said Tessa. "De Quincey will know she brought you here. He'll know she lied about where she found you. Does she think that after this the rest of the clan won't know she's a traitor?" Somewhere in the back of her head, Camille's soft laughter purred. She did not sound afraid. Will and Magnus exchanged a look.
"She does not expect," said Magnus, "that a single vampire who is here tonight will survive the evening to accuse her."
"The dead can tell no tales," said Will softly. The flickering light in the room painted his face in alternating shades of black and gold. The line of his jaw was hard. He looked toward the peephole, eyes narrowing.
"Look."
The three of them jostled to get close to the peephole, through which they saw the pocket doors at one end of the music room slide open. Through them was the large candle-lit drawing room. Vampires began to stream through the doors, taking their places in the seats before the stage.
"It's time," Magnus said softly, and slid the peephole closed.
The music room was nearly full. Tessa, arm in arm with Magnus, watched as Will threaded his way through the crowd, looking for three seats together.
He was keeping his head bowed, his eyes on the floor, but even so...
They're still looking at him, she said to Magnus under her breath.
At Will, I mean.
Of course they are, said Magnus, his eyes reflected light like a cat's as they surveyed the room.
Look at him. The face of a bad angel and eyes like the night sky in hell.
He's very pretty, and vampires like that.
I can't say I mind either.
Magnus grinned. Black hair and blue eyes are my favorite combination.
Tessa reached up to pat Camille's pale blonde curls.
Magnus shrugged. Nobody's perfect.
Tessa was spared answering. Will had found a set of chairs together and was beckoning them over with a gloved hand. She tried not to pay attention to the way the vampires were looking at him as she let Magnus lead her toward the seats.
It was true that he was beautiful, but what did they care? Will was just food to them, wasn't he?
She sat down with Magnus on one side of her and Will on the other, her silk taffeta skirts rustling like leaves in a stiff wind. The room was cool, not like a room crowded with human beings who would have been giving off body heat. Will's sleeve slid up his arm as he reached to pat the pocket of his waistcoat, and she saw that his arm was dotted with goosebumps. She wondered if the human companions of vampires were always cold. A rustle of whispers went through the room, and Tessa tore her eyes from Will. The light of the candelabras did not reach the far recesses of the room. Portions of the stage, the back of the room, were blotched with shadows, and even Tessa's vampire eyes could not discern what was moving within the darkness until De Quincey appeared suddenly from the shadows. The audience was silent. Then De Quincey grinned. It was a manic grin, showing fangs, and it transformed his face. He looked wild and savage now, wolf-like. A murmur of hushed appreciation went through the room, the way a human audience might show appreciation for an actor with a particularly good stage presence.
"Good evening," said De Quincey.
"Welcome, friends.
Those of you that have joined me here,"
and he smiled directly at Tessa, who was too nervous to do anything but stare back,
"are proud sons and daughters of the Night Children. We do not bend our necks beneath the oppressive yoke called the law. We do not answer to Nephilim, nor shall we abandon our ancient customs at their whim."
It was impossible not to notice the effect Quincy's speech was having on Will. He was as taut as a bow, his hands clenched in his lap, the veins standing out in his neck.
"We have a prisoner," De Quincey went on. "His crime is betraying the Night Children."
He swept his gaze across the audience of waiting vampires.
"And what is the punishment for such treason?"
"It is death,"
cried a voice, the vampire woman Delilah. She was straining forward in her seat, a terrible eagerness on her face. The other vampires took up her cry.
"Death! Death!"
More shadowy forms slipped between the curtains that formed the makeshift stage. Two male vampires holding between them the struggling form of a human man. A black hood concealed the man's features. All Tessa could see was that he was slender, probably young, and filthy, his fine clothes torn and ragged. His bare feet left bloody smears on the boards as the men dragged him forward and flung him into the chair. A faint gasp of sympathy escaped Tessa's throat. She felt Will tense beside her. The man continued to thrash feebly, like an insect on the end of a pin, as the vampire strapped his wrists and ankles to the chair and then stepped back. De Quincey grinned. His fangs were out. They shone like ivory pins as he surveyed the crowd. Tessa could sense the vampire's restlessness, and more than their restlessness, their hunger. No longer did they resemble a well-bred audience of human theatergoers. They were as avid as lions scenting prey, lurching forward in their chairs, their eyes wide and glowing, their mouths open.
"When can you summon the Enclave?" Tessa said to Will in an urgent whisper.
Will's voice was tight.
"When he draws blood, we must see him do it."
"Will?"
"Tessa."
He whispered her name, his fingers gripping hers.
"Be quiet."
Reluctantly, Tessa returned her attention to the stage where De Quincey was approaching the shackled prisoner. He paused by the chair, reached out, and his thin, pale fingers brushed the man's shoulder as light as a spider's touch. The prisoner convulsed, jerking in desperate terror as the vampire's hand slid from his shoulder to his neck. De Quincey laid two white fingers to the man's pulse point, as if he were a doctor checking a patient's heartbeat. De Quincey wore a silver ring on one finger, Tessa saw, one side of which sharpened to a needle point that protruded when he tightened his hand into a fist. There was a flash of silver, and the prisoner screamed, the first sound he had made. There was something familiar about the sound. A thin line of red appeared on the prisoner's throat like a loop of red wire. Blood welled and spilled down into the hollow of his collarbone. The prisoner thrashed and struggled as De Quincey, his face now a rictus mask of hunger, reached to touch two fingers to the red liquid. He lifted the stained fingertips to his mouth. The crowd was hissing and moaning, barely able to stay in their seats. Tessa glanced toward the woman in the white plumed hat. Her mouth was open, her chin wet with drool. "Will," Tessa murmured, "Will, please." Will glanced past her at Magnus. "Magnus, take her out of here." Something in Tessa rebelled at the idea of being sent away. "Will, no, I'm all right here." Will's voice was quiet, but his eyes blazed. "We've been over this. Go, or I won't summon the Enclave. Go, or that man will die." "Come." It was Magnus, his hand on her elbow, guiding her to stand. Reluctantly, she allowed the warlock to draw her to her feet, and then toward the doors. Tessa glanced around anxiously to see if anyone noticed their departure, but no one was looking at them. All attention was riveted on De Quincey and the prisoner. And many vampires were already on their feet, hissing and cheering and making inhuman, hungry sounds. Among the seething crowd, Will was still seated, leaning forward like a hunting dog yearning to be released from the leash. His left hand slid into his waistcoat pocket and emerged with something copper held between his fingers. The phosphor. Magnus swung the door open behind them. "Hurry." Tessa hesitated, looking back at the stage. De Quincey was standing behind the prisoner now. His grinning mouth was smeared with blood. He reached out and took hold of the prisoner's hood. Will rose to his feet, the phosphor held aloft. Magnus swore and pulled at Tessa's arm. She half turned as if to go with him, then froze as De Quincey whipped off the black hood to reveal the prisoner beneath. His face was swollen and bruised with beatings. One of his eyes was black and swelled shut. His blonde hair was pasted to his skull with blood and sweat. But none of that mattered. Tessa would have known him anyway, anywhere. She knew now why his cry of pain had sounded so familiar to her. It was Nathaniel. 11. Few are angels. We all are men. In our own natures, frail and capable of our flesh. Few are angels. Shakespeare, King Henry VIII. Tessa screamed. Not a human scream, but a vampire scream. She barely recognized the sound that came from her own throat. It sounded like shattering glass. Only later did she even realize that she was screaming words. She would have thought she'd cry her brother's name, but she didn't. "Will!" she screamed. "Will, now! Do it now!" A gasp ran through the room. Dozens of white faces swung toward Tessa. Her scream had broken through their bloodlust. De Quincey was motionless on the stage. Even Nathaniel was looking at her, dazed and staring, as if wondering if her screams were a dream born out of his agony. Will, his finger on the button of the phosphor, hesitated. His eyes met Tessa's across the room. It was only for a split second, but De Quincey saw their glance. As if he could read it, the look on his face changed, and he swung his hand up to point directly at Will. "The boy," he spat. "Stop him." Will tore his gaze from Tessa's. The vampires were already rising to their feet, moving toward him, their eyes glittering with rage and hunger. Will looked past them at De Quincey, who was staring at Will with fury. There was no fear on Will's face as his gaze met the vampire's. No hesitation, no surprise.
"I am not a boy," he said. "I am Nephilim."
And he pressed the button. Tessa braced herself for a flare of white witch light. Instead, there was a great whoosh of sound as the flames of the candelabras shot toward the ceiling. Sparks flew, scattering the floor with glowing embers, catching in the curtains, in the skirts of women's dresses. Suddenly, the room was full of billowing black smoke and screams, high-pitched and horrible. Tessa could no longer see Will. She tried to dart forward, but Magnus, she had nearly forgotten he was there, caught her firmly by the wrist. "Miss Gray, no," he said, and when she responded by pulling away harder, he added, "Miss Gray, you're a vampire now. If you catch fire, you'll go up like kindling wood." As if to illustrate his point, at that moment a stray spark landed atop Lady Delilah's white wig. It burst into flames. With a cry, she tried to rip it from her head, but as her hands came in contact with the flames, they too caught fire, as if they were made of paper instead of skin. In less than a second, both her arms were burning like torches. Howling, she raced toward the door, but the fire was faster than she was. Within seconds, a bonfire raged where she had stood. Tessa could just see the outline of a blackened, screaming creature writhing inside it. "Do you see what I mean?" Magnus shouted in Tessa's ear, struggling to make himself heard over the howls of the vampires who were diving this way and that, trying to avoid the flames.
"Let me go!"
Tessa shrieked. De Quincey had leapt into the melee. Nathaniel was slumped alone on stage, apparently unconscious, only his manacles holding him to the chair.
"That's my brother up there, my brother!"
Magnus stared at her. Taking advantage of his confusion, Tessa jerked her arm free and began to run toward the stage. The room was chaos, vampires rushing to and fro, many of them stampeding toward the doorway. The vampires who had reached the door were pushing and shoving to get through at first. Others had turned course and were streaming toward the French doors that looked out over the garden. Tessa veered to avoid a fallen chair and nearly ran headlong into the red-headed vampire in the blue dress who had glared at her earlier. She looked terrified now. She plunged toward Tessa, then seemed to stumble. Her mouth opened in a scream and blood poured from it like a fountain. Her face crumpled, folding in on itself, the skin resolving into dust and raining down from the bones of her skull. Her red hair shriveled and turned gray. The skin of her arms melted and turned to powder, and with a last despairing shriek, the vampire woman collapsed into a stringy heap of bones and dust lying atop an empty satin dress. Tessa gagged, tore her eyes away from the remains, and saw Will. He stood directly in front of her, holding a long silver knife. The blade was smeared with scarlet blood. His face was bloody, too, his eyes wild.
"What the hell are you still doing here?" he shouted at Tessa. "You unbelievably stupid!"
Tessa heard the noise before Will did. A thin whining sound like a piece of broken machinery. The fair-haired boy in the gray jacket, the human servant Lady Delilah had drunk from earlier, was rushing at Will, a high-pitched wailing sound coming from his throat, his face smeared with tears and blood. He was carrying a torn-off chair leg in one hand. The end of it was ragged and sharp.
"Will, look out!"
Tessa shouted, and Will spun. He moved fast, Tessa saw, like a dark blur, and the knife in his hand was a flash of silver in the smoky dimness. When he stopped moving, the boy was lying on the ground, the blade protruding from his chest. Blood welled around it, thicker and darker than vampire blood. Will, staring down, was ashen. "I thought he would have killed you if he could," Tessa said. "You know nothing of it," Will said. He shook his head once, as if clearing it of her voice or of the sight of the boy on the ground. The subjugate looked very young, his twisted face softer in death. "I told you to go."
"That's my brother,"
Tessa said, pointing toward the back of the room.
Nathaniel was still unconscious, limp in his manacles. If it weren't for the blood still flowing from the wound in his neck, she would have thought he was dead.
Nathaniel, in the chair.
Will's eyes widened in astonishment.
But how...
he began. He didn't get a chance to finish his question. At that moment, the sound of shattering glass filled the room. The French windows burst inward, and the room was suddenly flooded with shadow hunters in their dark fighting gear. They were driving before them in a screaming, ragged group, the vampires who had fled into the garden. As Tessa stared, more shadow hunters began flooding in from the other doors as well, herding more vampires in front of them, like dogs herding sheep into a pen. De Quincey staggered before the other vampires, his pale face smeared with black ash, his teeth bared. Tessa saw Henry among the Nephilim, easily recognizable by his ginger hair. Charlotte was there too, dressed like a man, all in dark fighting gear, like the woman pictured in Tessa's Shadow Hunter book. She looked small and determined and surprisingly fierce. And then there was Jem. His gear made him appear all the more startlingly pale, and the black marks on his skin stood out like ink on paper. In the crowd she recognized Gabriel Lightwood, his father, Benedict, slim, black-haired Mrs. Highsmith, and behind them all strode Magnus, blue sparks flying from his hands as he gestured. Will exhaled, some of the color returning to his face.
"I wasn't sure they'd come," he muttered,
"not with the phosphor malfunctioning." He tore his eyes away from his friends and looked at Tessa. "Go attend to your brother," he said. "That'll get you out of the worst of it. I hope." He turned and walked away from her without a backward glance. The Nephilim had herded the remaining vampires, those who had not been killed by the fire, or by Will, into the center of a makeshift circle of shadow hunters. De Quincey towered among the group, his pale face twisted in rage. His shirt was stained with blood, his own or someone else's, she couldn't tell. The other vampires huddled behind him like children behind a parent, looking both fierce and wretched at the same time.
"The law," De Quincey growled as Benedict Lightwood advanced on him, a shining blade in his right hand, its surface scored with black runes. "The law protects us. We surrender to you, the law."
"You have broken the law," snarled Benedict. "Therefore its protection no longer extends to you. The sentence is death."
"One mundane," said De Quincey, sparing a glance toward Nathaniel. "One mundane who has also broken covenant law."
"The law does not extend to mundanes. They cannot be expected to follow the laws of a world they know nothing of."
"He is worthless," De Quincey said. "You do not know how worthless. Do you really desire to shatter our alliance over one worthless mundane?"
"It is more than just one mundane," Charlotte cried, and from her jacket she drew the paper Will had taken from the library.
Tessa had not seen Will pass it to Charlotte, but he must have.
"What of these spells? Did you think we would not discover them? This black sorcery is absolutely forbidden by the Covenant."
De Quincey's still face betrayed only a hint of his surprise.
"Where did you find that?"
Charlotte's mouth was a hard, thin line. "That doesn't matter."
"Whatever you think you know," De Quincey began.
"We know enough." Charlotte's voice was full of passion. "We know you hate and despise us. We know your alliance with us has been a sham."
"And have you made it against the Covenant law now to dislike shadow hunters?"
De Quincey said, but the sneer was gone from his voice. He sounded ragged.
"Do not play your games with us," spat Benedict. "After all we've done for you, after we passed the Accords into law, why? We've tried to make you equal to ourselves."
De Quincey's face twisted.
"Equal? You don't know what the word means. You cannot let go of your own conviction, let go of your belief in your inherent superiority for long enough to even consider what that would mean. Where are our seats on the council? Where is our embassy in Idris?"
"But that's ridiculous," Charlotte said, though she had blanched.
Benedict shot Charlotte an impatient look.
"And irrelevant.
None of this excuses your behavior, De Quincey. While you sat in council with us, pretending you were interested in peace, behind our backs you broke the law and mocked our power. Surrender yourself. Tell us what we want to know, and we might let your clan survive. Otherwise, there will be no mercy.
Another vampire spoke. It was one of the men who had strapped Nathaniel to his chair, a big, flame-haired man with an angry face.
If we needed any further proof that the Nephilim have never meant their promises of peace, here it is. Dare to attack us, shadow hunters, and you'll have a war on your hands.
Benedict only grinned.
Then let the war begin here,
he said, and flung the blade at De Quincey. It whipped through the air and plunged hilt deep into the chest of the red-headed vampire who had flung himself in front of his clan leader. He exploded in a shower of blood as the other vampires shrieked. With a howl, De Quincey rushed Benedict. The other vampires seemed to awaken from their panicked stupor and swiftly follow suit. Within seconds, the room was a melee of screams and chaos. The sudden chaos unfroze Tessa as well. Catching up her skirts, she ran for the stage and dropped to her knees next to Nathaniel's chair. His head lolled to the side, his eyes closed. The blood from the wound in his neck had flowed to a slow trickle. Tessa caught at his sleeve.
"Nate," she whispered. "Nate, it's me."
He moaned but made no other reply. Biting her lip, Tessa went to work on the manacles that fastened his wrists to the chair. They were hard iron fastened to the sturdy chair arms with rows of nails, clearly designed to withstand even vampire strength. She pulled at them until her fingers bled, but they didn't budge. If only she had one of Will's knives. She glanced out over the room. It was still dark with smoke. In among the swirls of blackness she could see the bright flashes of weapons, the shadow hunters brandishing the brilliant white daggers Tessa knew now were called Seraph Blades, each one brought into shimmering life by the name of an angel. Vampire blood flew from the blade's edges, as bright as a scatter of rubies. She realized, with a shock of surprise, for the vampires at first had terrified her, that the vampires were clearly overmatched here. Though the night children were vicious and fast, the shadow hunters were nearly as fast and had weapons and training on their side. Vampire after vampire fell under the onslaught of the seraph blades. Blood ran in sheets across the floor, soaking the edges of the Persian rugs. The smoke cleared in a spot, and Tessa saw Charlotte dispatching a burly vampire in a gray morning jacket. She slashed the blade of her knife across his throat, and blood sprayed across the wall behind them. He sank, snarling, to his knees, and Charlotte finished him with a thrust of her blade to his chest. A blur of motion exploded behind Charlotte. It was Will, followed by a wild-eyed vampire brandishing a silver pistol. He pointed it at Will, aimed, and fired. Will dived out of the way and skidded across the bloody floor. He rolled to his feet and bounded up onto a velvet-seated chair. Ducking another shot, he leapt again, and Tessa watched with amazement as he ran lightly along the backs of a row of chairs, leaping down from the last one of them. He whirled to face the vampire, now a distance from him across the room. Somehow a short-bladed knife gleamed in his hand, though Tessa had not seen him draw it. He threw it. The vampire ducked aside, but was not quite fast enough. The knife stuck into his shoulder. He roared in pain and was reaching for the knife when a slim, dark shadow reared up out of nowhere. There was a flash of silver, and the vampire blew apart in a shower of blood and dust. As the mess cleared, Tessa saw Jem, a long blade still raised in his fist. He was grinning, but not at her. He kicked the silver pistol, now lying abandoned among the vampire's remains, hard, and it skidded across the floor, fetching up at Will's feet. Will nodded toward Jem with a return of his grin, swept the pistol off the floor, and shoved it through his belt.
"Will!"
Tessa called to him, though she wasn't sure if he could hear her over the din.
"Will!"
Something seized her by the back of her dress and hauled her up and backward. It was like being caught in the talons of an enormous bird. Tessa screamed once and found herself flung forward, skidding across the floor. She hit the stack of chairs. They crashed to the floor in a deafening mass, and Tessa sprawled among the mess, looked up with a shout of pain. De Quincey stood over her. His black eyes were wild, rimmed with red. His white hair straggled over his face in matted clumps, and his shirt was slashed open across the front, the edges of the tear soaked with blood. He must have been cut, though not deeply enough to kill him, and had healed. The skin under the torn shirt looked unmarked now.
"Bitch," he snarled at Tessa. "Lying, traitorous bitch. You brought that boy in here, Camille, that Nephilim."
Tessa scrambled backward. Her back hit the wall of fallen chairs.
"I welcomed you back to the clan even after your disgusting little interlude with the lycanthrope. I tolerate that ridiculous warlock of yours, and this is how you repay me, repay us."
He held his hands out to her. They were streaked with black ash.
"You see this," he said, "the dust of our dead people, dead vampires, and you betray them for Nephilim."
He spat the word as if it were poison. Something bubbled up out of Tessa's throat. Laughter. Not her laughter, Camille's.
"Disgusting interlude!"
The words came out of Tessa's mouth before she could stop them. It was as if she had no control over what she was saying.
"I loved him, like you never loved me, like you've never loved anything. And you killed him just to show the clan that you could. I want you to know what it is like to lose everything that matters to you. I want you to know, as your home burns and your clan is brought to ashes and your own miserable life ends, that I am the one who is doing this to you."
And Camille's voice was gone just as quickly as it had come, leaving Tessa feeling drained and shocked. That didn't stop her, though, from using her hands behind her to scrabble among the smashed chairs. Surely there had to be something, some broken-off piece that she could use as a weapon. De Quincey was staring at her in shock, his mouth open. Tessa imagined that no one had ever talked to him like that, certainly not another vampire.
"Perhaps," he said, "perhaps I underestimated you. Perhaps you will destroy me."
He advanced on her, his hands reaching out.
"But I will bring you with me."
Tessa's fingers closed around the leg of a chair. Without even thinking about it, she swung the chair up and over and brought it crashing down onto Quincy's back. She felt elated as he yelled and staggered back. She scrambled to her feet as the vampire straightened up, and she swung the chair at him again. This time a jagged bit of broken chair arm caught him across the face, opening up a long red cut. His lips curled back from his teeth in a silent snarl, and he sprang. There was no other word for it. It was like the silent spring of a cat. He struck Tessa to the ground, landing on top of her and knocking the chair from her hand. He lunged at her throat, teeth bared, and she raked her clawed hand across his face. His blood, where it dripped on her, seemed to burn like acid. She screamed and struck out at him harder, but he only laughed. His pupils had disappeared into the black of his eyes, and he looked entirely inhuman, like some sort of monstrous predatory serpent. He caught her wrists in his grasp and forced them down on either side of her, hard against the floor.
"Camille," he said, leaning down over her, his voice thick. "Be still, little Camille. It will be over in moments."
He threw his head back like a striking cobra. Terrified, Tessa struggled to free her trapped legs, meaning to kick him as hard as she could. He yelled. Yelled and writhed, and Tessa saw that there was a hand caught in his hair, yanking his head up and back, dragging him to his feet. A hand inked all over with swirling black marks. Will's hand. De Quincey was hauled, screaming to his feet, his hands clamped to his head. Tessa struggled upright, staring, as Will flung the howling vampire contemptuously away from him. Will wasn't smiling anymore, but his eyes were glittering, and Tessa could see why Magnus had described their color as the sky in hell.
"Nephilim!"
De Quincey staggered, righted himself, and spat at Will's feet. Will drew the pistol from his belt and aimed it at De Quincey.
One of the devil's own abominations, aren't you? You don't even deserve to live in this world with the rest of us, and yet, when we let you do so out of pity, you throw our gift back in our faces. As if we need your pity, De Quincey replied. As if we could ever be less than you, you Nephilim, thinking you are...
He stopped abruptly. He was so smeared with filth that it was hard to tell, but it looked as if the cut on his face had already healed.
Ah, what? Will cocked the pistol. The click was loud, even above the noise of the battle.
Say it.
The vampire's eyes burned.
Say what?
God, said Will. You were going to tell me that we Nephilim play at God, weren't you? Except you can't even say the word. Mock the Bible all you want with your little collection, you still can't say it.
His finger was white on the trigger of the gun.
Say it. Say it, and I'll let you live.
The vampire bared his teeth.
You cannot kill me with that stupid human toy.
If the bullet passes through your heart, Will said, his aim unwavering, you'll die. And I am a very good shot. Tessa stood frozen, staring at the tableau before her. She wanted to step backward to go to Nathaniel, but she was afraid to move. De Quincey raised his head. He opened his mouth. A thin rattle came out as he tried to speak, tried to shape a word his soul would not let him say. He gasped again, choked, and put a hand to his throat. Will began to laugh. And the vampire sprang. His face twisted in a mask of rage and pain, he launched himself at Will with a howl. There was a blur of movement, then the gun went off and there was a spray of blood. Will hit the floor, the pistol skidding from his grip, the vampire on top of him. Tessa scrambled to retrieve the pistol, caught it, and turned to see that De Quincey had seized Will from the back, his forearm jammed against Will's throat. She raised the pistol, her hand shaking, but she had never used a pistol before, had never shot anything. And how to shoot the vampire without injuring Will? Will was clearly choking, his face suffused with blood. De Quincey snarled something and tightened his grip. And Will, ducking his head, sank his teeth into the vampire's forearm. De Quincey yelled and jerked his arm away. Will flung himself to the side, retching, and rolled to his knees to spit blood onto the stage. When he looked up, glittering red blood was smeared across the lower half of his face. His teeth shone red, too, when he, Tessa couldn't believe it, grinned, actually grinned, and looking at De Quincey said, "How do you like it, vampire? You were going to bite that mundane earlier. Now you know what it's like, don't you?" De Quincey, on his knees, stared from Will to the ugly red hole in his own arm, which was already beginning to close up, though dark blood still trickled from it thinly. "For that," he said, "you will die, Nephilim." Will spread his arms wide. On his knees, grinning like a demon, blood dripping from his mouth, he barely looked human himself. "Come and get me." De Quincey gathered himself to spring, and Tessa pulled the trigger. The gun kicked back hard into her hand, and the vampire fell sideways, blood streaming from his shoulder. She had missed the heart. Damn it. Howling, De Quincey began to pull himself to his feet. Tessa raised her arm, pulled the trigger on the pistol again. Nothing. A soft click let her know the gun was empty. De Quincey laughed. He was still clutching his shoulder, though the blood flow had already slowed to a trickle. "Camille," he spat at Tessa, "I will be back for you. I will make you sorry you were ever reborn." Tessa felt a chill at the pit of her stomach. Not just her fear, Camille's. De Quincey bared his teeth one last time and whirled with incredible speed. He raced across the room and flung himself into a high glass window. It shattered outward in an explosion of glass, carrying him forward as if his body were being carried on a wave. vanishing into the night. Will swore.
"We can't lose him,"
he began and started forward. Then he